Madrid is not a town famous for its bridges, in part because there isn't a major river running through the city, so you don't need many. There is a river called the Manzanares, and it lies to the west of the old town and below it, basically. For many years, the Manzanares was practically inaccessible to visitors because the city's beltway, or ring road, called the M30, once flanked it on both sides, making it nearly impossible to get to, let alone enjoy, since the noise and air pollution would make the experience nearly unbearable. But about 15 years ago, the M30, at least in that section of the M30, was redirected underground. It was buried in one of the great engineering feats in recent memory and was replaced with a pleasant riverside park known today as Madrid Rio. Because it's a bit off the beaten track for most tourists, Madrid Rio doesn't always get the attention it deserves, but it's a great walk and a great way to see the city, as well as a chance to see some of the old low-lying bridges like the Puente de Toledo, the Puente de los Franceses, the Puente de la Reina, and finally the Puente de Segovia, or the Segovia Bridge, which, as far as I know, is the oldest bridge in the city. It was built in the 16th century. Now, the Puente de Segovia is sometimes the source of confusion because there's another bridge in Madrid which doesn't cross a river, but actually connects two sections of the city, and it's known as the Viaducto de Segovia or the Segovia Viaduct. A viaduct is a term used mainly for bridges that span over low-lying ground. They are quite common these days on modern highways or railroad tracks that traverse hilly terrain. This difference between a bridge and a viaduct will be important for our purposes when we discuss just part of the reason why the Segovia Viaduct is so famous in Madrid. Now, the origin of this structure was an attempt to solve an age-old physical conundrum for the city. You see, until the 19th century, if you headed straight south along Bailén Street from the Royal Palace, where sort of the original part of the city was, it wouldn't take you long to realize that if you wanted to go straight, say to the magnificent Basilica of San Francisco Grande, you'd have to go down a fairly steep gully and then climb back up it and then continue on. And that took a while. Your other option was to go east and around that gully, which was time-consuming and inconvenient. This was a geographic feature that was as old as the city. A stream, creek, known as the Madriz, which some believe may have to do with the origin of this, of the name of the city, Madrid, and was later known as the San Pedro Stream, flowed softly down there to the Manzanares River below. And maybe during periods of heavy rain, it would sort of fill up and be more active. But for many centuries, this hill, sort of where the gully was, constituted the most natural entrance into the city from the river below. But as the city expanded, especially starting in the 16th century when Madrid became Spain's capital under Philip II, new neighborhoods were built, and soon that gap was seen as an inconvenience that needed fixing. Now, there were plans to bridge this gap as early as the 18th century and then again around 1810, but nothing came of them. In the meantime, the authorities seemed to like the idea of entering the city through that hill, through that gully I was telling you about. So what they did to the San Pedro stream was cover it. And this was in the 19th century. And they turned it into a street called Calle Segovia, which still exists today. Now, this was common practice back then. Most of London's smaller rivers and streams, for example, were buried around this time and used to form part of the sewer system. So Madrid was not unique in that sense. And in any event, the fact that the river had been removed from sight doesn't mean it had disappeared altogether. In fact, Madrid has an astonishing reserve of underground water. And that's definitely a subject for another podcast on another day. What it hadn't solved, though, was what to do about this ravine that separated the two parts of the city. And it wasn't until 1870 that authorities finally decided to do something about it. The city ordered the building of a much-needed bridge to cross that gap. This commenced in the early 1870s, and it was finished in 1874. It was a much simpler structure than the one we know today, and was made of iron for the most part and wood, and it was designed by a man named Eugene Baron Avignon. It was considered to be an engineering marvel of its day. It was simple but effective. Now, before the viaduct was open to the public, they had a sort of a ceremony, which was the bodily remains of the famous 17th century playwright Pedro Calderón de la Barca, one of the most famous writers in Spanish history, and an entourage that was accompanying this the remains would be the first to cross the bridge ever. Now, just why that was is deserving of a totally new podcast, and I'm going to do that, I promise, because the story, the journey, and the odyssey of Calderón de la Barca's remains and the mystery as to their current whereabouts, because they don't know where they are, has had experts scratching their heads to this day. So yes, expect something to come along one of these days in the form of a podcast. It's a really interesting story. Anyway, for our purposes, though, the important thing to know is that some feel that the fact this sort of funeral march of the illustrious writer was the first to cross the viaduct would foreshadow the grim history associated with this bridge. Just what am I talking about? Let me tell you about this now. Well, it just so happens that being a viaduct that was pretty high, it wouldn't take long for some people to find a use for it that sort of strayed far from its intended purpose. By that I mean they used it for committing suicide, and with a fall of 20 plus meters onto a hard cobblestone surface, the bridge proved ideal for ending one's life, as city authorities would sadly soon find out. The first victim came barely a week after it was inaugurated, then the next shortly after that, and then came a third. Together, they sort of triggered a trend that would last for more than a century. The Segovia Viaduct soon became synonymous with this tragic behavior, making news regularly. Now, not every attempt ended badly. In fact, a famous case involves a young woman from a well-off family. We're talking in the 1870s. And well, she threw herself off the bridge only to be saved by her dress. Yes, that's true, or at least according to the chronicles. You see, the metallic frame of her dress, of the skirt part of her dress, sort of opened up like an umbrella, turning it into a makeshift parachute. So she sort of descended softly and basically only twisted her ankle. Now, the reason she had decided to take the plunge was for love. As usual, that was often the case. When her family refused to back her desire to be with a young man from the working class neighborhood of Carabanchel, her parents, after the suicide attempt, realized how much he meant to her, and they finally gave in. So that was sort of a happy ending, but most didn't end that way. Such was the popularity of this location for these acts of desperation that a higher gate was added just 5 years later, but it didn't seem to slow the most determined individuals down. People would continue to make the fatal leap. Not only would they take their own lives, but sometimes they would take with them the very person who was trying to stop them. It was considered a good location for homicides, trying to appear like a suicide. So, despite all the good that had come from this bridge, in terms of traffic and things like that, something sort of very negative had come of it too. By 1900, hundreds had taken their lives, and the next century would prove no less tragic. Now, the city of Madrid made efforts to do something about it, but it couldn't seem to find the right formula. One idea they actually did this was to put, I think, 10 street lights in order to make it brighter and harder for people who didn't want to sort of act in broad daylight, so to speak. But they seemed to do little to deter those who really wanted to go through with it. And if anything, as the papers would joke, the only thing they really achieved was make it easier for onlookers to look on and see this. They weren't really stopping people. All the same, the bridge served its original purpose in other ways. Not only was it a major artery for that part of town, it also afforded wonderful views of the western half of the city. Now, while this was a plus, there was another serious problem that had developed over the years, and that was the state of the bridge itself, which was badly in need of repair. This was due to the fact that while the original version was impressive in its own way, it in no way was designed to handle the volume of traffic or the kind of mechanized vehicles that would soon begin to dominate city life. By the end of the 19th century, it began to show signs of weakening, and in 1928, it was closed completely until further notice. The city decided to start over and build a new version, and they started in 1932 with these handsome towering arches that acted as supports, a sort of Art Deco in style, and it's the version that we see today. The work was stopped during the Spanish Civil War. It survived the conflict, was repaired and completed in 1942, and it stayed that way until the 1970s, when once again engineers detected some structural flaws that required immediate solutions. So once again, they closed it off to traffic and started to rework. Now, there was a fear that they were actually going to tear it down and start over again, but they realized that they could strengthen it without having to build a totally new bridge. It was refurbished, strengthened, and heightened by about 2 meters too. And in 1978, it was ready to be reopened. But first, they needed to perform one more load test to ensure it could handle the increasing weight from the increasing amount of traffic. And to prove their point, they actually parked 12 trucks, each weighing about 38 tons, on the bridge. And now, can you just imagine that? Imagine being the last truck to pull on. I'd be the driver. I'd just get out of the cab and go rushing back to the edge of the bridge. I remember seeing the photo of this moment for the first time many years ago and thinking it was absolute madness, but it really happened. Maybe it was just sort of a publicity stunt more than anything else, but one thing is for certain, the bridge has held up very well ever since. The same couldn't be said for those who wanted to commit suicide. They just wouldn't stop jumping. Jumping off bridges may seem like a dramatic, romantic way of taking one's life, almost something from a different age. But by the 1990s, the jump rate was as high as ever, reaching 4 or 5 suicides a month. And if you think about it, that's a really tough way to go. So it's almost incredible hear those numbers. There were even some accidental victims. For example, in 2000, a stuntman leapt only to become a victim of a faulty safety device that was supposed to prevent him from hitting the ground, but it failed and the professional was killed. But by that time, the other problem, the suicides, had pretty much been placed under control. What they did was build a fairly effective acrylic panel, transparent, and it's like glass, you could see through it, that towered nearly 10 feet high, or nearly 3 meters. This was back in 1998. There is no doubt that this sort of plastic protection hurt the visual value of the bridge. It was controversial at the time, and you can sort of understand that, but it did get the job done. It's not easy to get hard data on just how effective it's been, but the general consensus is that it has served its purpose, it has achieved its goal, and that few suicides have taken place since then. So how many people have died since the beginning of the first viaduct? Well, that's very hard to tell. It reached a point that the city stopped publishing official records, in part because it didn't want to alarm the general public, and in part because it didn't want to encourage others to follow suit. So there's no telling just how many have killed themselves, but it's estimated to have reached at least 500. But given the suicide rates that we know about in the past 150 years, that number could well be a very low-end figure. Now, despite its dark reputation, definitely a selling point with some tourists, it's a cool bridge and one of my favorite parts of town. The viaduct doesn't have a lot to say for itself up top. It's a pretty straightforward looking bridge, and the anti-suicide panels take away from the magic somewhat, but if it means a safer city, then so be it. The views are great and it's nice to walk across. The underbelly is a little more interesting, architecturally speaking. Some call the design rationalist or international, but I think there are clear elements of Art Deco there too. And there you have it, a brief history of one of Madrid's prettiest sightseeing locations, a history full of human progress and human tragedy. Thank God the latter has become mainly a thing of the past. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and Castos. And if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you want to have access to all of our podcasts, you can check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.